I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Did you intimidate her? Her mother says you wouldn't let her use the phone. Were you intoxicated? Past the point of knowing what was going on. Better yet, don't forget, leave the keys on the TV set. Hoping you're gone from the corner bar. Here we are after dark, knocking back the maker's mark, scratching up the dollars from my buddy's car.
There we go. All right, I'm in Quinns, and the last time I was recording a podcast in Quinns was about 2 years ago with Steve Diggle from Buzzcocks. On that day, the pub was shut. We had the place to ourselves. Today, it's open. It's business as usual, which is why you'll hear some music in the background. But it's nice and early, so hopefully we won't get any stag doos or anything rolling in here and making too much noise.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
I'm here with Greg from the Bouncing Souls. They play the Electric Ballroom tonight. The first thing I want to go in on with you, Greg, is Lean on Sheena, right?
Okay.
That's an all-time top 10 song for me. Okay. Not just even in punk. Like, I don't know whether it's the lyrics, the melody, the sweet combination of the two, but there is something about that song that is just musical perfection for me.
That's great. Well, do you know the history of it?
I want to know about it.
Okay. Do you know the Mighty Mighty Boss Stones?
Of course.
Do you know Joe Gittleman, the bass player?
I don't.
Okay.
No, not Joe, personally, but
okay. Well, this is fun. Yeah. Good fun facts.
Okay.
Joe had a side project called Avoid One Thing. I think probably early 2000s, and he put out a record, and it has that song on it. So Joe wrote that song.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we were recording our gold record. It was being produced by Ted Hutt, who's from London, actually. So he was buds with Joe. And sort of at the last minute, he kind of like dropped this on us. He was like, so I've got an idea. It's a friend of yours, you guys you like, you know.
Were you prone to doing that before? Had you ever really done that before?
Well,
like someone else's material?
Not really, never. So Ted was very delicate about it. It was pretty funny, his approach. Like, we were literally the day before we were starting tracking. He was just like, check this out, guys, you know. Like, and so very, very subtle about it, you know, almost slipped it in there. He's like, we could just track the drums and, you know, we'll see how it goes, whatever. Like, he was very... And we were like, oh, yeah, Joe, this is a cool song. And
he hoodwinked you into the situation, basically.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But
thank God he did.
He knew. Like, and I think another guy, I can't remember, Side One Dummy Records, Joe Sib. So Joe Sib, we call him the mayor of Broville because he's just like, bro, what's up, bro? He's like California bro, the mayor of that, right? So he was on Ted. He's like, you got to get the Souls to record, you know, Lean on Sheena, bro. You know, like, you got to do it. Like, so I guess, and Ted agreed with him. And so that was like, they had this little plan, like, try to get him to do it. So
I never knew that, man.
It's a cool story. And the funny thing is, I'll finish up.
I guess because you just make Joe's, it your own so much.
But Joe's original version had four of the same verses. So I was like, Joe, this is so cool. Like, I get it, you know. Ramones, dude, repeat, you know. It's fine. That's cool. It can work. So, but after that third time, like, I to Ted, I was like, I can't sing it the fourth time. I can't. I can't do it. So Ted's like, let's see if we can get Joe on the phone. So I call Joe. I'm like, so he's all excited that we're going to record it. He's beside himself. And I'm like, dude, what's the song about, you know? And he's like, I don't really know, you know. It was like, it's sort of an unfinished idea. So I get exactly what you're saying when you're like, that fourth verse is not quite, it's not done. I didn't finish it. So he's like, I just, and then he and I sort of hashed it out and kind of wrote that fourth verse.
Over the phone?
Yeah.
Whilst you're basically in the studio.
We talked about it. Yeah, like it was like, you know, within a day or two, I had to track the vocal, you know. It was like, let's figure this out because I can't do it like that, and you know. And the rest is history, as they say.
And it's, I mean, is that a staple in every live show you play now?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, we might forget it once in a while, but barely ever.
What songs can you absolutely not disclude?
True Believers.
Yep.
Probably Lean on Sheena. Hopeless Romantic. You know, there's a few times that they've dropped out, but luckily we're kind of band that, like, you know, you post a thing on the internet and we're like, what songs do you want to hear? And like, there's no repeats. You get like 25 different songs, which I feel is a good thing.
A good problem to have. Yes. Well, you've got a lot of tunes. And
people like the diversity of our songs. And so that's cool.
So do you switch it up on the road like night after night, or do you tend to keep one basic running order and roll with that and then occasionally throw in the odd extra or take something out here or there? Because you could go Pearl Jam style and write the set on the day and mix it up every day, couldn't you? You've got enough songs.
We've done that. We've done every variation. We've done like all requests, you know, ridiculous stuff. But on this tour, because it's sort of a, you know, we want to encompass a lot of stuff. We've been pretty much sticking to a similar set, but we'll do what we call the river.
Okay.
Where, you know, you write the set and then you draw a river in this part. And that's the part where we'll take requests, which helps to sort of create that spontaneity instead of it being just the same thing exactly every night. We don't like doing that, but it's nice to have a certain flow,
a framework to work within. I mean, 30 years is a trip.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself on a tour like this one looking back, or do you find yourself doing a lot of conversations like this where you're asked to look back? Or, I mean, where's your head at as a group kind of three decades in on a special anniversary tour like this?
Yeah. I just feel really proud, man, honestly. And for not the most obvious things, like, I mean, we're not the biggest band in the world, but I'm in London. I'm a dude from Jersey, and, you know, we're doing a great show. We sold out a club in Manchester. It's just fantastic. But bigger than that is, like, we really like hanging out.
That was the other thing I wanted to ask you. Is that the secret to the soul's longevity, is you do still genuinely enjoy each other's company?
Yeah, like,
there's
couldn't
no friction
do it.
There.
No, I couldn't do it. None of us would do it anymore. Like, you know, and I think it's a combination of a lot of trial and error through the years, you know, like touring 9-10 months out of the year for like 5 years plus, like, and it just wore us out. It wore me out, and everyone kind of had different ways of dealing with it, you know. And
what was yours?
I was the only guy that was married,
right? So had some that semblance created of this anchorage back
home. Yes, and it was like being married on the pirate ship is like, nobody likes the married guy on the pirate ship. Not that like nobody didn't like me, but like everyone just started living different worlds.
You're in different lanes, yeah, right?
Just exactly. That's it. So we essentially, there's not really any animosity, but we were just splitting off, growing up and doing different things. So that was hard to deal with because we weren't, you know. And then, you know, Brian and Pete talk about it. It was like, we were all just, no one was really connecting because we were just off in sort of like wild west life, you know? So that was like sort of our trial by fire for a few years. And as for my marriage as well, which survived, and I'm very happy about that.
Are you a father as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been a father for 2 years now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's amazing. And I'm so happy I waited till I'm like almost 50 to have a child, because those earlier days, I don't think I would have been
the
as
father
present.
You'd want to be.
Yeah. So that's amazing.
And you, Pete, and Brian have known each other since you were what, 15, 16 years old?
Yeah, or earlier. Yeah, we knew each other because we lived in the same town, but we didn't really start hanging out till around that time. Yeah. So yeah, we're essentially in our high school band still.
And that's rare. You know, there's a few that have done it, but yeah. I think, you know, most people, it's the one kid from high school that finds another kid from another high school, perhaps, and then, you know, they find pros around the circuits, and, you know, you sort of build it a bit more like a group that's kind of, you know, I guess assembling pieces.
Yes.
Whereas you guys out the gate were just like, let's start a band, and here we are 30 years later.
Yes. Yeah,
basically so the same band.
I value the fact that we've all grown up essentially navigating all these different things that happened through your 20s and through your 30s. And
together.
Yes.
That's a lot of history, isn't it? That's
it
a lot
is.
Of shared, unspoken
exactly.
history.
Exactly. And yes, the music has kept us together. So when the times were hardest, I think everybody always went back to be like, there's still part of this that I really love, even though it's not going well or it's we've been on the road forever and I'm fried. I don't want to give this up. And like, it just, you see it like, bands that break up, they still come back together because it's just, there's the magic of making music for people and for yourself. But you just
or the
can't
paycheck
beat it.
For other bands.
Or the paycheck too. I mean,
which is understandable, you know, because if you're in music, that's where you make a living now, is on the road, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. So all those things. Yeah.
When did you first kind of hit on the classic soul sound that we now know and love? Was there a song? Was there an album? When did you feel like all the pieces came together and you're like, ah?
Yes, there was a tipping point. We struggled. We didn't know. We were really just janky, out of high school, trying to figure out. We liked all this different music: hardcore, ska, punk, like all everything. And we were trying to put it all in the same pot, and it was not good. But when we wrote the song "Joe Lies," which is on our first record, that moment, it was like we wrote that song, and we're like, "Oh, everything else we wrote now we see how much it sucks," you know, like, or it's just not. Us. And so that was the beginning of us finding who we were as the Bouncing Souls. Yeah.
At least you got that on your first album, though, because there's bands like, say, NOFX, who yeah. maybe their first three albums are kind of unlistenable in many ways. And then obviously, you know, they strike on their sound a few records in. You're pretty lucky.
Yeah, we did have a first, the EP that came out. It's just this, it's okay.
Is that out there? Is that
it's
in
out
the world?
There. Yeah. Yeah. It's
ever called playing the, off that?
It's called the Green Ball EP. No, right. We don't play anything off of it. It's not horrible when I think back of it now. Like we were like did our damnedest, you know. Like we really were trying, but just weren't there yet. Yeah.
Who was the benchmark for you guys? I guess a big thing about your sound is these huge anthemic choruses right at the center of the most yeah. beloved Bouncing Soul songs.
Yeah.
Who were the guys or girls or who was the groups that were doing that? For you guys, and you took inspiration from it, and were like, if we can do even half of what they're doing, we'll be onto something.
We were definitely inspired by, like, the, you know, the soccer chants and stuff like that. Just those, like, big group singing. And also, as far as, like, being inspired by, like, the English bands and that, all that sort of cultural stuff that we were like, whoa, those are so, all those chants, they're so passionately, you know, sung and by so many people, that's powerful, right? I saw Bruce Springsteen at Giant Stadium in New Jersey in 1984.
What tour would that have been on?
It was
the River.
Born in the USA.
Born in the USA.
He did, I mean, you think about it now, he did 10 nights. There was 60,000 people. He
per night?
10 nights in a row. Yeah, per night.
I don't even think with him that would happen now, would it?
No, I don't.
Those
think
days
so.
Are probably.
It was his, at his height.
Beyond. Big.
Yeah. So, yeah, he does a thing where he played that song, Hungry Heart. You know.
Love that tune, yeah.
Song starts, you know, as soon as the verse starts, got a wife. He doesn't sing it, but 60,000 people sing it. So that was a like, transformational like musical experience for me just being.
How old were you at that show?
13, 14.
Wow. So the exact right age really to be experiencing like that and having your
mind-blowing as ever mind-blowing gets, you know. So I think that absorbed into my system that a few years later when we started being, you know, playing cover songs and hanging out with Pete and Brian and, you know, it just was like the idea of singing along was just like automatic. Like the idea of like wanting to sing along or inspiring other people to sing along was just something that we just, it was a carrot you're chasing, you know, as a creator or songwriter the whole time.
Well, that's what I think makes music so special is it is, if you want to go down that road, it's almost a spiritual experience because there's large groups of people, you're all on the same emotional plane.
Yeah.
And you're all kind of exercising whatever shit you've had going on in your life that day out of you.
Yeah.
And just, you know, soaking up the moment and
That's it. And it truly, just doing that, it breaks away that disconnect we feel in the world, where you know you're alone in the world, feeling that we all experience from time to time more than others, but it breaks that, you know. So yeah, I think that's probably was our, like, one of the things that me, Pete, and Brian and everyone else in the band has over the years, that was like our main focus, to like attack that.
Go for the Springsteen. Yeah.
Yes.
How important is New Jersey to this band?
Pretty important. And again, people have asked me about this too, and it's one of those sort of unexplainable things. It's like where you come from, it's sort of just so much part of you, the little things and how you see things and how you speak and how your perspective is. It's hard to even talk about it.
But I get that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For everyone. So, then there's a pride. There's always a certain, I mean, there's definitely the Jersey thing, because New York and all the like sort of crap that New Jersey would get from like New York, you got the sort of extra like pride.
Like an underdog thing as well.
That
right?
thing. Yeah. That's happening in New Jersey a bit. And then on top of that, when we were coming up, all the West Coast bands were really becoming like the most popular, or like the Epitaph bands and all that. So that's where the song East Coast Fuck You kind of came from too. It was sort of just like, just an answer to like everyone just being like, whoa.
SoCal. Yeah. We assumedly, like, a lot of those bands would understand what you were doing and would enjoy that.
They did.
Track
all
there,
of them
right?
did.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Fletcher and like,
so it wasn't like an East Coast
it.
West Coast beef,
no,
like
they
hip hop.
Loved it.
Like,
they loved, they got it and loved it. As soon as we met those guys, you know, like Bill Stevenson as well. Like, you know, he loved East Coast Fuck You. I Like Your Mom. He was just like, nobody writes songs like that anymore, and he was stoked about it when I first met him. Of course, and that was amazing. First meeting Bill, yeah.
I had Stephen Van Zandt on this show, and he talked a lot about, you know, the Jersey sound. And
yeah,
I mean, obviously you're, you know, a lot younger than him, but yep. Was that still having its impact on the local sort of music circuits when you were growing up, that bar band thing? Was that still a part of it? Going on when you guys were coming up? And
I think those guys lived in a different type of era, and it's sort of, it died out a bit, like, because of the world was changing. But like, yeah, the bar band at the beach, like, there were so many places that had bands. And we just did an article that it's called The History of the Stone Pony in Asbury Park.
Yeah.
And it goes into detail about those guys, which he might have talked about a little bit, how they like they brokered a deal with the Stone Pony guys to play original music like on a Tuesday night, because that's
which
how
was
much
not the done
right
thing, then.
Think about it now.
They wanted top 40 hits,
covers,
didn't they?
Yeah, all covers. They wouldn't even let them play original music. So that was how they started doing that. But so when we came up, that wasn't a thing. You know, it was like more people didn't go out to see bands as much. There was like crazy amount of venues in the tri-state area then. But by the time we were coming up, they were gone. We were playing like little halls that we had to rent out and do all ages shows. So I think the vibe was still there. The inspiration was still there, because we were inspired by all that music. And the fact that they just came from right where we came from, that was enough.
And put the town on the map, right? Put is it a state?
The Jersey Shore,
the
you
Jersey
could say.
The Jersey Shore, yeah.
Yeah.
Just put it on the international map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and what was the venue for you where you spent most of your younger days probably seeing?
There was a place called City Gardens in Trenton.
Okay.
And it was like in a terrible neighborhood, scary place to go. But you know, you look at the old bills, and there was so many great shows there. Like, so I saw Toots and the Maytals there. I saw Debbie Harry, not even as Blondie, Yellow Man. We saw lots of hardcore shows, Meat Men, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Like,
how good
all those kind of like
with
at
them,
the time.
Fishbone, Thelonious Monk, like that 80s LA. Just
did you see Fishbone back then?
No, I've still never seen them. But I had Perry Farrell on the podcast a few weeks ago, and he was talking about that, you know, exact scene that was Fishbone, Chili Peppers, Janes,
yeah.
Thelonious,
I mean, the Chili Peppers were cool seeing them. Like, there was probably 300 people there. And now that I think about it and what they became, like, they were... It was cool as a teenager to see what they were doing. You know, it was definitely...
Were they naked? Were they doing all that stuff?
I saw them on Halloween in New York City, and they fully did the glow-in-the-dark body paint with the socks.
Yeah.
And it was a great night because, like, it was such a freaky scene, first of all, the Ritz in the city in the late 80s. It was the kind of thing where you're like, are people wearing costumes or not?
Yeah,
it was just like out there. Like,
you could have come here any night of the week and they probably
might look
the
just
same.
Like this, in August, you know, or whatever. So that was pretty trippy as a teenager coming in from Jersey. We used to hang out there once in a while, but like that was the next level.
Was Jersey dangerous back then? Because New York was obviously sketchy as hell,
some
right?
Areas like... where we grew up was pretty suburban and like, again, like feel very fortunate now to have grown up there about a half an hour. There's some trees, some grass, you know, we rode our bikes around and like, but very close to all this stuff going on, close to Philly, close to New York. We could take the train right into the city and skate and go to shows and stuff. So, and to Trenton, that place we went to all the time. And that was a sketchy area. But Fishbone was one of the greatest bands I've ever seen.
I've heard so many people say that.
I can't even...
And Bad Brains seem to be the two bands that just inspired almost everybody to start a band and take that live show to the next level. Like live, those two bands. Did you see Bad Brains back in the day as well?
I didn't see Bad Brains back in the day with HR. Just a little bit later, we played with them and then played with them when... CB's was doing their string of closing shows. We played, opened up for Bad Brains, and HR sang, and that was cool.
Do you know Jake Snufnarowski?
Yes.
Yeah? He's a good friend of mine.
Yes. He was supposed to come visit my house.
He booked that whole last run of CBGB shows, right?
Yes. He was on his motorcycle trip. He was supposed to recently just going to come out to Idaho, but plans changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a dear friend.
Yeah,
he's a great bud. He's a dear friend.
Great bud.
Do you do the Rocks Off cruises with him? Have you done those?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've got to get out to New York and experience
them. He was here for like a year.
Down in London?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he used to run the Brooklyn Bowl, and he got me loads of DJ work there.
Oh, cool.
And then through that, I got to meet a bunch of agents of various bands. And
sure.
How I got the Flogging Molly cruise ultimately was through a series of events that, you know, began with good old Jake.
Okay.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
How important was skateboarding to you guys growing up?
Was it
right there with punk rock as a...
Yeah. I mean, Brian and I, we spent after school, we'd skate in his driveway. You know, it's just like, I think just those experiences, like bonding and being creative together as friends, like that's what you do when you're skateboarding. You're like hanging out and you're sort of adventuring. You go late night. When we lived in New Brunswick later on, we would go on like late night skate missions. Like, so yeah, it just... It's all part of the same soup.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I remember the introduction for me to so many bands was skate and BMX videos.
Yeah.
Like so many bands I discovered and the compilations as well.
Yeah.
Were you guys ever on any of those? Were you ever a part of that Epitaph thing? There was one record you put out on Epitaph,
one of the
right?
most influential or most heard was we had a song on one of the first Tony Hawk video games.
Okay.
To this day, like people who don't even know the band, they're like, wow, I know that song. Where do I know that song from? You know, like,
which track was on there?
I think it was Mantham.
Okay.
Maybe.
I was listening to that on the way to speak to you.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
Have you got a favorite Souls record?
That one or Summer Vacation. If I had to pick one, it's sort of like this pivotal thing. Like, but there's again, like there's so many good songs, but I think as far as a whole record, it's one of my faves.
I love Gold Record.
There you go.
That's an amazing one. That doesn't get talked about enough.
Everyone's got a different choice, and that's why I'm like, great.
What do we play tonight? How many have you got now? You on 10, 11 albums?
11, 10 full lengths, handful of EPs. Yeah, yeah.
I fucking love it. What bands early on for you put their arm around you and sort of gave you a leg up and took you out and put you in front of some big crowds? Was there any that really... come to mind?
Yeah, we did a tour in 96 with the Descendants, and
was that around their sort of comeback year?
It was like everybody was so excited. They put that record out in 96.
Everything Sucks, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
And had some great, you know, great, obviously it's like going to school, you know, being on tour at that time at that level, you know, playing to a couple thousand people a night for a week or 2 weeks was a whole new experience. Just that in itself. Just seeing how they operate. Same with like the Mighty Mighty Bosstones and NOFX and Rancid took us out. Like they were just also just getting, you know, coming starting the whole Rancid thing when we started. So everybody loved Operation Ivy. So it was like instantly Rancid kind of leaped.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's a handful.
Have you ever been a party guy, Greg?
A little bit, yeah. Like I said, in those early days.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just didn't suit me because you got
to... Was it the voice? Was it more the mental and emotional fatigue? Was it a combination?
Combination, yeah. I think we all operate, our bodies and our minds are operate in different ways. So it's you kind of have to figure out what works for you.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just had to like quit smoking and like... Because I could feel I wasn't... It was like... not focusing on what's good, you know, and like a punk show with like energy. That's just like, if I can't exert myself and I'm just out of it, it just didn't work for me. So, yeah, I figured that out. It took a little time, but, then I'll drink a couple beers now and then, but it's nothing, you know, it can't really go hard. It's, I go hard at the show and then I need to go to sleep, you know, or like, come down
with
a beer and then get something to eat, and that's about my extent.
Who was your favorite running partners back in the day? You got any good stories you can share from crazy nights out? I imagine Fletcher from Pennywise, if you'd have ever cut loose with him, would have been a force of nature back then.
Those are the kind of things it's hard to bring to mind, you know what I mean? Like we got to be kind of hanging around to stimulate some memory.
Yeah
definitely Pete the guitar player is, you know, and Pete and Brian both, they went harder for way longer than I did. I was just like, the sleeps. We room in hotels. I was in the sleeps room.
And those two were in the,
I can't even think of it, what their name of their room was, but that was a whole different era
with very little sleep going on.
It's like, I had to put my foot down at some point. I'm like, there needs to be a room where there's no partying, you know? And that was where I was like, okay, Greg's in the sleeps room. We respect that. And that's how we got along, you know? It was like, we don't want, you know, you got to be happy. And that's...
Yeah, you can't stand,
and we compromise, you know?
Look at the guy, like, that's bad news. Isn't it?
Yeah, so that's how it works, you know? Like, and everybody respects each other, and that's how it works, yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What have you got going on or have had going on outside of music or outside of the Souls at least?
A bunch of stuff. I've started about 5 years ago with my wife. We started doing like music for kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's called Playdate, and it's been great. It's also another like...
Just playing to kids or to families? My parents and the kids?
Well, like, yeah, it's sort of for families to share music together. You
right.
know, like kid-friendly. So the music itself is kid-friendly.
But acoustic or electric?
A little of both.
Right.
A huge... eye-opening experience as well for me, like thinking I'm like, oh yeah, I've been in a band for a long time. As soon as we like wrote some songs and tried it out, we were like, I was like, man, I'm so self-conscious because the kids, like, they're very, you know, they're
present,
not, they're not going to be polite, so it was
this stinks.
Or just walk away, or you know, like, they're not interested. So it was kind of a cool, like, to see what you're made of kind of thing. It was much more personal and even more, you know, to show you where you're at.
Did you start doing this before you had a kid?
Yes.
So was this almost like, let's see if we can be around families and maybe we'll start our own?
It was sort of like, we didn't purposely
what was the
genesis
for it?
Yeah, like we didn't try to do it like intentionally. Like my wife started doing some writing. She's a musician and a songwriter, and she was doing some writing, and she had this piece that was like, this is a sort of like a children's book. So I was like looking for something to do on tour, so I started creating art for the story, just for like this, for example. Right now I'd be like off working on some art. So we wrote this book. I did all the art, and like, what do we do now? We got a finished book, let's put it out. So we put it out, and then we went on a little tour, just like we do when we're as a punk rock band, you know. It was back in the MySpace days. I just wrote to people, and tons of people reached out. Like, we would love to have you, like, teachers who were, like, punk rockers and stuff, had us in their classes.
So was it, like, families who were Souls fans, kind of, almost, and teachers?
There was a lot of them that sort of gave us a start. That we did a little tour on the East Coast, and sometimes we did schools, sometimes we did, like, coffee shops. And it was great. That was like reading the book. But we're musicians. Like, my wife had written a couple of songs. So we brought our guitars, and we'd read the books, and then we'd sing two or three songs. And people were like, do you guys have a record? You know, that's just how it started. And we're like, no, we haven't recorded those songs. They're just a couple of like sweet songs, you know? So that just went on. And then, do you know Mike Park?
No.
He has a label called Asian Man Records.
Yeah, I know the name. Yeah.
Put out... early Alkaline Trio records and a bunch of stuff. He was starting a kids label. He had a punk rock label because he had kids and he had music. So he was a catalyst. He said, you guys, I know you guys have really good kids songs. If you record it, I'll release it. So that was the catalyst for my wife and I. We're like, all right, but Mike's going to put it out. He's excited. Let's finish it. So that's how we started the project. And then just like anything else, we put the record out. We're like, we got a tour on it, I guess. Where do we play, you know? So we did it again, and that was around 2012.
And where did you play on that
run? We played in like Southern California. We played in the Northwest. We played in Jersey.
In terms of venues, though, what sort of spaces?
All kinds of stuff.
Right.
Coffee shops, like little museums, parks, schools, like little like boutiques, like kids clothing boutiques. And we played the Asbury Lanes in Asbury Park, which is pretty fun. And that was like a couple of Jersey shows were pretty big. So we've done two records, and we've taken a hiatus for two years because we've had our son. But it's been great. And we did like surprisingly, not that surprisingly, but we also did, my wife was inspired to do what we call the ninja meditation. So she was like, let's try to do a meditation for kids when they're going to sleep, you know, to sort of chill them out. And so we did it, and it was totally different. You know, it was just spoken word. And then we did some sounds, sort of like cues along to help the kids sort of relax. And we did no marketing on it at all. We just finished it. We're like, this is cool. We played it for some people. Like, this sounds great. Great. We just put it out like on TuneCore and forgot about it. Put it out. And I think 6 months or a year, Shanti checked, and she's like, this thing's getting played like crazy. And it keeps getting played like completely, like it's getting tons of hits.
Just organic growth.
Yeah.
Mad.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What an exciting and refreshing thing to do outside of punk rock.
Exactly.
As well.
It was completely it really helped me also bringing that different energy back into the souls, just like doing the same. And it's the same for Brian and Pete. Brian owns his own tattoo shop now. And
where's that based?
In Bradley Beach, New Jersey.
Yep.
Pete's producing, totally busy, making great records. And so that's also why we get together and we're like high school buds again, or better than that, because we're not like, you know, it's high school buds, but grown up and,
yeah.
You know.
Mature, wiser.
Having fun, but still joking around, yeah.
There's a lot of bands that I've spoken to over the years, and I'm sure you're aware of them because they're quite vocal about their admiration of Bouncing Souls. A couple of big ones that spring to mind.
Cool.
Brian Fallon, Dave Haas.
Yeah.
Both of which have been on the show. Is that something that, you know, makes it all the more rewarding for you to know that whatever inspiration you took, you've also passed on to...
Younger bands.
Is that a trip as well?
Yeah, I feel so fortunate, have so much gratitude to have, you know, I think as an artist, you're trying to say something that's happening inside yourself and you want the world to listen to it. Like, I feel like you want it to respond, whether it's, even if it's whatever it might be, negative, positive, as an artist. So if you start seeing all that, it gives you a satisfaction. It's not the end all satisfaction. It has to be, you know, you have to be okay with it without that. But all that, it means a lot. And you know, just having the impact where the music just helps people in their lives is like from varying levels, from just having a good time to like helping them get through hard times. Like, I can't ever understate that, how awesome that is. Yeah.
Have you been meeting a lot of fans on this run that have been there since the beginning? Have you noticed that?
A handful, yeah. Like, I can't remember, somebody who was at like a show like back in 96, like our first European tour was there, a couple people from those early days. So that's great.
It's a real trip.
It is, man.
And do you find that there's now like, parents bringing their kids? Are you at that level yet?
Oh
yeah.
And their kids are like adults.
Yeah.
20s, you know. Which is super trippy, yeah.
Will you continue for as long as it's fun? Is that the plan?
Yeah. We have a plan. So we've been doing this acoustic sort of pre-show thing all year, which we've done a handful of times over the years, like radio shows and in-stores, but we never like focused any energy on like acoustic.
Well, the songs are so perfectly suited to just stripping back on it.
Yes. So now that we've been really just chipping away at it and doing it every day or every other day, we're like, this is great. So we're going to do a record. So we're already booked in to record with Will Yip, who recorded or produced our last EP, just came out. And we're going to record an acoustic record. And so,
Will that be new songs or old songs acoustic?
It's going to be... No, maybe one new song, maybe one or two.
Yeah,
but essentially, we're doing the hardest part is to sort of choose. You know, we want to choose what we're going to do. Excuse me.
It's all good. That's the soda and orange, ladies and gents.
We're in the quiet part of the day here.
I did think, I was like, should I get a Guinness? I was like, no, I'm going to get judged by Greg. We've only just met. I can't be ordering a Guinness at midday.
I was like, maybe a half a pint, you know?
We can get one after if you want to celebrate the end.
Maybe.
I wanted to ask you a couple more questions before we wrap. Excuse me if I'm being ignorant and uninformed as well, but is there either Bouncing Souls book or documentary? And if not, are either of those things something you would like to do?
Well, we did release... we have them here. You should check it out. It's a full like photo book, 100 pages, stories and photos from our 30 years. It's called Bouncing Souls 30 years of life with the Bouncing Souls. And that's, I'm really proud of too.
So it's like a nice high end scrapbook of
the full
kind of story.
Pretty much. Like we collected.
Have you had like several photographers that have been with you a lot over the years, or is it just like kind of everyone that's been
a handful
on the journey
all
the way?
Yeah, one of them he kind of took the reins to sort of like him and a guy who did the graphic design work on it. They did the book. We just gave him like tons of material, and we had this cool, pretty clever way of getting stories from fans. We did this thing on Instagram called #SoulSunday. So every Sunday we would ask people just like. Write just any random Instagram post about something that happened to them related to the Souls. So we would get people unknowingly, like they weren't writing for a book, because people get...
Yeah, then you get conscious, right? And yeah. If you're not used to doing that, you criticize and you hold back on your true thoughts and feelings, don't
exactly.
you?
Exactly. Yeah. So we got some cool, like, you know, very off-the-cuff type of little stories in there, and also a lot of stories from our friends and close friends who knew us and other bands that we like. And I think it's great. I'm proud of it, and it's fun that... It's like we did that, you know, because we talked about it for 10 years. Like, we have all this material. What are we going to do with it? So that's really cool. It's done.
Will there be any left at the end of the tour that people can get online, or is it
yes.
an on-tour only thing?
It's a bit, we already sold out of a first pressing. So
wow.
That's also cool. So yeah, but they're available online. I think it's a little pricey on the shipping here in the UK. But
they're a true believer. They'll pay.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, you can get it tonight before we leave.
There you go. I wanted to ask you, as a father, right, in the world we're living in now, not to go too sort of serious at the end,
yeah.
but do you worry about the future of the world for your kid now?
I think, you know, this is in theory, worrying doesn't get us anywhere.
No, or right? complaining online.
Right. It doesn't do anything. No. So, yes, those feelings come at me stronger than they used to, you know, because now I have someone I really, really care about that's going to be in the world after I'm gone, as opposed to, well, I'm just going to do what I can while I'm here and then see ya, you know. But yes, and I think, you know, I do practice meditation and I do practice...
Do you do that on tour as well?
When I can, I
imagine it's fucking tough trying to fit stuff like that in on the road. Find a room, first of all.
So again, it's loose. And meditation to me, it's not about like striking a pose and you know, all that. It's also like a minute by minute practice as well. So like meditation is, you can live your life in meditation, you know, trying to stay focused and keeping your everything that they teach you to do in meditation. You know, you don't have to sit down in one place to do it, but that's how you start, you know, to find that center. So anyways,
a lot of people, just to quickly focus in on that, a lot of punks seem to be getting into that.
Well, when you break it down, it's not weird at all. I mean, we're like, we don't want to do what everyone else does. We want to, we're like trying to find what's different. We're trying to find what's real and like where do we go for that? Like, so to me, it's like, you know, you don't want to buy into what everyone else is doing or just like being a robot and just like
consumerism and technology. And
so where do you go to sort that out? You really got to go inside. Like, you're observing your environment and then you're just like processing it and being like, how is this working for me? Am I just going to get blown around by all this whatever bullshit's going on, you know, whether it's the media or what's popular or money, you know what I mean? That's probably the biggest one. We're all scrapping to survive, pay the bills, and those things can completely consume you. And you know, so,
well, I guess that's why it's called consumerism, right? I've never even thought about it that way, but it is. It's like, careful what you wish for, because that really will eat you up from the inside. Yeah,
right. So I think that's the challenge, and that's, again, this is how I try to zero myself out when it comes to my son. And the way my life, literally, you know, against all odds, following my creative, wacky ideas. Like, my parents were supportive, but they certainly weren't like very, like, my dad was just, Greg, you got to go to college. You
old
know,
school.
Like, yeah. And like, he's like, go ahead, do that band thing. And, but you know,
get your degree.
Know if you want to go to college, I'll help you out. But he wasn't negative about it. You know, which was, I give him lots of credit for. And then just quickly, a few years in, the first time it really struck my dad is when we played City Gardens in Trenton, came home with, we did like two or three shows. And then I came back to visit him and he's like, how's it going? You guys had some shows? I'm like, how'd they go? I said, good. I said, we made $10,000 in t-shirts. And he's like, double took. like this light went on. He was like, what? So from then on, he's like, maybe what is this thing you're doing? You know, barely paying attention. So anyways,
So proud dad.
Yes. Now he's extremely proud dad. And so all our parents are. And that's also an amazing feeling. But try to reel this back in. I have to have, I mean, it sounds corny and stuff. It has nothing to do with religion, but I have to have faith in what following my own intuitive feelings, following my heart, whatever words you want to make sense or, you know, whatever makes sense for that. I trust that my son will have the same thing and that he will also have the power and already does in his like heart and soul to create his own world within this madness. Cause that's what we did, you know? And I truly believe everyone has that capacity. You know, the world isn't, you're not subject to the world, or you are to a certain extent, but you have the power to, you know, obviously create
and exist on your own terms.
You can,
to
you can
a large
do it.
Extent.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I get
you
that.
You
know,
understand you're a self-creator too. You've created
well,
your own
podcast.
This is
what I've done with this show. Exactly that is basically dodge the rat race for as long as possible and stay free and be happy. And, you know,
yeah.
I think that people feel like you have to work to live, but really it's like, no, you can do both.
Yes.
And enjoy both.
Yeah. And there's no getting around having to be responsible and work
and pay
to
bills
some extent.
And, yeah.
But is you can do it on your own terms, you know, to varying levels, I think. Yeah.
And if you get to do it, I mean, the one thing that I'm always slightly envious of is this is very much like a solo venture.
Yes.
And obviously meeting and connecting with people is why I love it so much. But it is at the end of the day, it's like it's me out there on my own.
Yes.
And what I've always thought, and it's the same when I go on the DJ tours and stuff, it's like, man, I wish I was in a band with a group. You got that gang, you got your brothers and sisters looking out for you.
Yes.
And that's a really cool position to be in. It comes with its, I'm sure, own
it's got
pros and
cons. You know, I totally get it because I've done, you know, some solo shows and stuff. I'm like, it's harder, you know, it's easier to have a gang, but also you are, in the end, you're like king of your own empire, you know,
exactly,
which has its perks.
Thank you for pointing that out. It's good to remember,
you're
isn't
just
it?
Like,
it's like, man, I'm out here on my own. It's like, actually, I can do what I want. I don't have to answer to another guy.
Yeah. So
yeah.
It, and,
everything like that has its pros and cons.
Have their pros and cons. Like, and it's awesome to have your gang, but it's also be like, I'm just going to change my mind. And you can reach out to people for advice, you know, I mean, but in the end, you know, you're the big boss, you know, you can be like, invite people in to help you make choices or whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
What's the best thing about being in the Bouncing Souls for you, Greg?
Just like having something in life that's been so meaningful on so many levels for me, to be able to like create music, learn from all these extended experiences, see the world, and have meaningful relationships all over the world. Like, and it's helped me learn, you know, to have a better marriage and on every level. It's helped me become the person I am. I don't even know how. It's so deep.
Isn't it funny that, you know, this industry can really chew and spit people out, but if you can navigate those seas, it can enrich your life so much. And it's such a shame that sometimes some people allow the negative side of it all to weigh them down and beat them ultimately, isn't it?
Yeah, and I feel fortunate because we've created a good enough relationship with our audience that we can maintain it, you know, financially, you know, to be able to come here, and it's still worth it for us and, you know, for the people coming out. So I feel super fortunate, and it's not easy. And I think it's not easy for anybody, but it's rewarding. So it's better to have that work hard and feel good about it than work hard and feel like that lack of self-satisfaction, I think. Yeah.
What a pleasure talking to you, my friend.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thanks for coming on
the
show.
Great being here.
I'll see you tonight. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. See you later.
Nice one, dude.
Good chat. I met some people along the way. Some of them fit, some of them stay. Some of them want, some are gone by. Gotta be friends, I love till I die. From all these people I try to learn. Some of them shine, some of them burn. Some of them rise, some of them fall. But good or bad, I know them all.
The Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.